When I say risk, what do you think about? Is that jumping from an airplane? Snow skiing? Bungee jumping? Well, each of these is definitely a risk, but risk can be a whole lot more. Have you ever thought about the risk of going to work, opening or closing a building? Risk to yourself, risk to others. There are hundreds of these risks hidden in our everyday lives. And a great way to explore these is through the people who work to manage these risks every day. That's why we chose the name, Everyday Risk, to emphasize the hidden nature of these risks and speak with different experts on the ways we can manage them. Join me, Larry Pogue, and my co-host, Lucas Fonestill, as we talk with the best and brightest about their work, the risks they see, and how we might manage them.
Hey, Larry, we've got a great podcast today with Lori Worthington to talk about managing stress. Can you tell us a little bit about Lori, please?
Oh, certainly, Lucas. Lori has more than 30 years of experience in the insurance, technology, and healthcare fields, working with health systems, health insurers, and employee benefits plan. She's an innovator and a problem solver who thrives on helping organizations make ideas happen so they can enrich people's lives. And she's currently the president and co-founder of Right Angle and Stress OS. Lori, thanks for being here. I wanted to kind of start off, just really ask about how does the employer-employee relationship affect stress? What kind of things are you considering there?
Well, when we look at stress, and particularly when we look at stress becoming toxic, it really has to do with a situation where stress is prolonged and there's no longer supportive relationships. And so work can be a really healthy place with good stress, but it can also be a place where that prolonged stress or as relationships get strained or as they turn unsupportive, it can be a pretty common place that we see stress start to build and turn into something toxic because it's where we spend so much of our time.
Well, and you talk about that in the workplace. I mean, why does that matter to a workplace?
Well, you know, work is very interested right now. We're hearing about employee engagement and needing to have that very high because we know that employee engagement, when it's high, leads to better customer satisfaction. You know, better job satisfaction means that you treat your customers better. Well, the barrier to high employee engagement is stress. And so stress plays a role in that whole customer satisfaction paradigm. It also plays a big role in driving absenteeism, turnover, presenteeism, and workers' comp injuries and work comp claims.
So you're even saying that stress can be directly related to work comp and some of those other injuries that we see.
Yeah, the National Safety Council tells us that 60 to 80% of workplace injuries are stress related. The CDC backs that up. This is data that's been around for a while, that stress is one of the common catalysts for a workplace injury.
When we look at that stress across the board, though, you know, I have some employees who are doing really well in the job, and then I have other employees who don't do so well. So why would that be?
Well, you know, you have a mix of things. We don't just live at work. So it could be that there are employees who are in a stressful situation at home. They could have stressful relationships or stressful finances. Maybe they don't feel safe in a part of their life. There could be things going on that are not as well known at work that are impacting them. And, you know, our stress is a perceived stress. So how you and I perceive stress, we might have the exact same stressors and you perceive them far better and of less consequence than perhaps I do. And so even with equal stressors, we may not have the same perception of that. And that perception is what's driving how we react to the things that happen in our life and how we respond to them.
I know before you had kind of talked about maybe the super worker versus the less effective. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that we find is, you know, we all thrive on different things. And so the super worker who's excited, they're chasing their career, they have a lot that they want to accomplish. They thrive on the completion and approval and acceptance that goes with that. So they're really striving that way. They may also have really supportive relationships at work, that they thrive in that competition and that contest. There's other folks in that same, if they get put in that same pool of people and same circumstances, it will shut them down. And many times that's because they've either not got good habits or they've got other things going on in their life that are making the stress escalate for them more than balance out and give them a good balance between work and life and just good healthy habits that let them be resilient and let them grow the resiliency in their life to something that they can respond and enjoy work.
So I mean, this is just, we're talking normal day-to-day work. I mean, when I'm looking now, we're experiencing a crisis, and organizations experience different crises at different times. Right now, we kind of have a national crisis going on. I was kind of seeing maybe three breakpoints. Maybe you could help me think about each of these. What about those employees who are working in the frontline positions? What types of things should we be looking for, or are they dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, those folks that are our first responders and our frontline, whatever their role, they're fatigued. So when you're fatigued, when you're not getting enough sleep, when you're not getting to eat healthy, when you're not getting to have exercise that's not just walking back and forth between the beds, you're trying to take care of people. All of those basic habits, eat, move, sleep, mindfulness or meditation, all of those things, when they become deficient in them, drive our stress levels way up. And so we have people on the front lines who are working long shifts. They are fatigued. And they are feeling that I do think we're seeing, you know, what we see in social media, we see a lot of really supportive relationships. In many cases, people are trying to really support that effort. That's helping kind of combat that fatigue. But we are going to see that, you know, happen. Those folks have got to be able to get a rest, to get a break, to be able to unplug from that a little bit, to just rejuvenate their mind and body so that they can be even more effective when they're on the job.
You talked about nurses, frontline, EMT, that type of thing. You know, I'm wondering too, I have a lot of frontline employees who are grocery workers, mm-hmm. and I have businesses that are trying to start back up, and they're talking about putting people in the front, taking temperatures, interacting, tax preparers who are still working right now. You know, what about those folks? I mean, they don't maybe get all the hero recognition, right. But what's the stressors there?
I think their stressors are often higher because they're not getting that recognition. They're not having meals catered into them. So you think about the truck drivers, you think about the folks who, yeah, are taking the phone calls and still trying to, you know, keep business processing, taking care of all the customer service calls from people who need to reschedule payments or defer payments. And so there's a lot of stress there. And in many cases, those roles are not getting certainly the recognition, and they're not getting the support. So it comes down for those situations. What are managers doing? What are businesses doing to help those workers feel even more connected and more valued and supported, that they're being valued for being there and being present and trying to work, about letting them feel valued and letting them have those connections. So making sure they're getting some time either directly with their manager or as a team, just to laugh, talk about, you know, a good experience someone had that day, and be able to decompress a little bit and feel a sense of connectedness. One of the things we're seeing both for people who are working at work and at home is their normal feeling of connection is different right now. And it's that loss of connection and not having that supportive relationship structure that will push stress into that toxic zone.
You brought up workers that are working at home, right? That's kind of my second tier, is the folks that are in the home space, but they're still working in that sense of connection. Anything you're recommending to employers? You know, a lot of employers may be doing town hall meetings. We have 35 people on the video screen or right. and doing a meeting that way. But, you know, is that sufficient? Is there anything else we need to be doing?
I think that, you know, the town halls are important, you know, little messages that go out that remind people that we're in this together. But I think it's also the personal touch. So if you have workers who need that one-on-one time from you traditionally, you know, they need that walk by their desk, or they need that conversation at the water cooler, they need that eye-to-eye contact, then you've got to find a way to give them that. That may be a quick phone call that's just one-on-one, but they need to feel that connectedness is still occurring in that management relationship or a peer-to-peer relationship. So making time for that is going to be an important part of helping people working from home or working still on the floor or in the business feel connected and feel like they are really valued through this time.
Excellent. One of the third kind of tiers that I had thought about was the employees who maybe have lost a position, been furloughed, laid off, but the employer, you know, has the desire to hire them back. what should the employer be doing to try to retain those folks?
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, so many businesses are in that situation and they desperately will need all of those workers back as soon as they have funds and the country is reopening. So I think it's really important to do a couple of things. One is to keep some level of connection so that they do still feel like personally they're valued and that it's, you know, so it may be that outreach, you know, a phone call, an email, a text, whatever your normal method is, to keep a relationship with all of those former workers. The other thing is just going back to good organizational communication, which is being upfront with people and saying, hey, look, we hope to get to have everybody back. Here's our status. We're watching this closely and giving some sort of an ongoing communication, at least weekly, that is giving people updates, letting them know that, hey, this business has every intent of reopening. Here's what we're doing. Not putting false hope in front of people because that doesn't help them, but letting them know, here's where we're at. We're still paying attention. You're still valued. And having that message that's maybe going to the collective group of former employees, as well as then that individual touch, will go a long way towards that worker saying, gosh, if I can go back to this company, I want to go back here versus start looking for other jobs that, you know, might be my new place long term.
And Larry, those are three great points that you brought up. And Lori, you explained them really well. I think this, to circle it back up, I mean, everybody handles things differently, right? And you had mentioned earlier that stress leads to losses. So from a safety aspect, this is something that we really have to look at, whether they're on the front line working from home or been let go, looking to hire back, right? And I think all these things such as signs of recognition, communication, all the things that we did normally, we just have to emphasize and make sure that we're making a point to do these things now, because even the supervisors, the managers, the C-suites, they're handling things differently too. They've got their own things going on. So they have a lot of pressure on their plates as well. So to remember to give the recognition, to remember the extra communication, there's a lot of things going on everybody's different plates, but those really need to be brought to the forefront.
Agreed. I think the other thing we need to just be cognizant of is, you know, we know that there's a lot of financial stress for everyone, and that's then creating relationship stress. We've got a lot of people who are working from home and schooling from home, their children, and that's a whole new kind of dichotomy for everyone to be dealing with. And we're all trying to navigate that and try to figure out how to do calls with only a little bit of background noise and keep the kids progressing and all those things and the house not burned down in the process. In the course of all of this, the thing we have to remember is people may have some personal safety, whether it's actual threat or perceived threat, but, you know, the things that we're aware of, and we've been seeing people in the media start to talk about this, isolation or not being connected is really detrimental for people with anxiety and depression. And so we need to be aware that people need to have some connectedness. We need to be aware that there could be some personal safety concerns. So making sure that workforce, you know, do they have access to food or food resources? You know, do they have access to the things that they need just to feel those basic necessities of life are still there, and that the company, whether it's a former employer or an existing employer, is at least helping point them to resources that can fill the gap for them if they have that, so that we keep safety as high as we can for people.
I hear you kind of feathering around even the topic of spousal abuse at home. And I know there's been some increase with that. People aren't able to escape their abuser. And so we have seen some increases in that. And again, you know, as employers, you know, our awareness of that, and it, you know, if we can at least provide resources, I think it would be important. So I, you know, Lori, before we go, I wanted to take a couple minutes. Just tell me a little bit, you work with Stress OS. Tell me a little bit about them, how you're helping employers gather some of this information, and then what kind of successes you're having there.
Thank you. So we created Stress OS about 3 years ago to really address deepening the understanding of stress drivers in the workforce and in individuals. And we've done surveys and assessments that let us see what's driving stress in individuals, and then we can provide some aggregate level data to a workforce or to a workplace. And then we're able to really help people reduce their stress and build resiliency by knowing what their stress drivers are, what particularly those areas that are of higher stress. We can begin to give them programming and resources to help them work at those at their own pace, but really build skills that help reduce that stress, or, you know, adapt the perception of that stress and build habits and resiliency that help them combat high stress situations and keep that healthier. So that's the work that we've been doing. We've seen some really interesting results in the data. 65% of the people that we've surveyed, their perceived stress score is high, even though there may be other factors in their life that they don't show high stress areas, and they may not even show as many stress drivers as some other people, but their perceived stress score is still very, very high. And so it's interesting to look at that data and watch that. We see that really there's only about 1% of the people we've surveyed that have really high job satisfaction. Most of them have middle of the road satisfaction. And we have almost half of the people that we've surveyed actually have low job satisfaction. So there's some really interesting information in the data. We see financial, before COVID-19, we were seeing, financial concerns being, finances being a stress. And we see work-life balance, just balance being a big stressor. So those are the big stress drivers we've seen is balance, finances, job satisfaction, and then their perceived stress.
So you collect this data, you're able to come then after implementing programs and looking at different things, are you able to come back and assess data, new data, and are you seeing positive results?
Yes, we track these. We can see an individual's improvement in their stress levels, and we can see how their stress drivers are changing and what their scores adjust to, both raw scores and kind of then balanced scoring that we do. We're also able to then learn from the employer what they're seeing as changes. You know, are they seeing less absences? Are they seeing less turnover? We've actually been doing this with employers just a few months. And so what we see is individual scores are changing. For example, there's an individual who took their assessment in early November that their score was 73. That was their personal stress index, which was in the higher range of a personal stress index on a scale of 100. They just retook this last week, actually in the middle of COVID-19, and their score was 53. So by seeing the drivers, the work that they've been doing individually is showing up in their overall score another 4 months later. And so we'll see that reflected in their employer's results. You know, we would expect that obviously they're more present at work. We would expect that they're not as likely to leave their employer, and we would expect they're less likely to have an injury. So part of the measurement with employers is what do we see as trend, both in how people's scores are changing as well as what's their workplace experience. And that workplace experience will take a little bit more time to see because we're avoiding, potentially avoiding a workers' comp claim. We're avoiding an absence. We're avoiding a major chronic condition showing up because we're helping people get healthier. And so it's driving risk down, which is more of a value investment. It's harder to measure absolutely, but it's very relevant to what the workplace can see from a long-term perspective.
So definitely better than using the magic eight ball or our crystal ball. I think your data is able to really give some additional insights holistically to the employee. So I enjoy that. I know we've always enjoyed talking about this and how employees interact in their environment. So I wanted to thank you for being here today, Lori, and thank you for sharing your insights, both just from day-to-day operations and also from this current crisis situation.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Wow, Larry, that was awesome. What great conversation with Lori right there. I just can't believe all the effects that stress really does have on the workforce with the employee, their employer relationship. I mean, she talked about presenteeism, absenteeism, and then stress being a leading cause of injury. I just thought those are really important for employers to think about and to realize. And the effects of work-life balance. So not only at work, but the stresses that are involved at home. So super exciting call. Was really excited to hear her talk about these and bring these to the forefront, because especially with the pandemic and COVID-19 right now, this might be some stuff that kind of gets to the back burner, but realizing that this is even more important today.
Well, it should be surprising for employers to realize that such a small number of their employees are truly fully engaged. Capturing that information and then learning strategies and ways to improve that, it really can up production, obviously, from an employment standpoint, reduce workers' comp. And then I've also discussed with her in the past that You know, ISO 45000 and the new OSHA management standards are looking for employers to create feedback loops in which they're getting employee satisfaction, employee engagement in different projects and things that they're doing. And I think, you know, Lori's organization, StressOS, is one that can certainly help employers develop some of those programs. So great information, I think very timely. And of course, we should follow up with Lori, I think, in 6 months just to see what new information and data that she's developed with her program.
Larry, I think she has a program that helps companies get to the next level. When they're wanting to be one step better, this is an opportunity for them to do that.
I certainly agree. And great, great podcast. And we'll get back with everybody soon.
Great to chat with you guys. See ya.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday Risk. We look forward to talking to you again soon.